You are listening to Disrupt Development, the podcast that shares inspiring stories of disruptive thinkers and doers within sustainable development. In today's episode, Tim van Deursen is going to talk about how technology offers new perspectives on global challenges. We will talk about Meet the Soldier, an innovative project that disrupts peace building and conflict reconciliation through virtual reality. And we will talk about Hack the Poacher, a groundbreaking project that captures poachers through technology.
Sitting next to like 80 engineers, very bright people at Q42, I was wondering, well, with this 80 bright minds, there has to be something that we can do, you know, to kickstart some of the global challenges that we see.
Tim van Deursen founded Hack the Planet, a social enterprise that offers nonprofits smart and pragmatic technologies to solve societal problems. Tim is an engineer on a mission to make a positive contribution to the world. He wants to supercharge high-tech ideas and concepts needed to solve global challenges. Tim, welcome to the Disrupt Development podcast.
Hi.
We have been working together in the past, exploring how we could leverage big data for the HIV/AIDS response. That has been a very inspiring, but also very challenging journey. I saw that your social enterprise, Hack the Planet, has been winning various awards since. How have you been? It was a long time.
Yeah, so Alex, yeah, great. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Well, stuff at Hack the Planet basically went off, so to say. Yeah, exploded.
Cool. So we're going to talk about it today, the awesome projects you have been working on. Before we're going to dive into the projects you'll be working on together with other NGOs and international organizations, let's talk about your organization. Tim, you work for social enterprise called Hack the Planet. It's your organization. How are you hacking the planet? Could you please explain me, and what is your organization doing?
The first project that we did was with Greenpeace in 2016, and we didn't actually know that we were, you know, building Hack the Planet by then. We were just, you know, investigating and reaching out. But then suddenly we realized, after we did this project with Greenpeace, that we realized, wow, this is, you know, there's actually such a need for people like us, for that have this technical expertise and could actually, you know, help these organizations a little bit further. So, and this is basically when Hack the Planet started. So basically by accident.
and Greenpeace reached out to develop a technological solution for a specific problem, or how did it start?
Yeah, so basically I emailed them, I called them, I said, well, you know, I'm having this idea and I just want to help out and see if there's any, you know, technical challenge that we can do with you, you know. So, you know, sitting next to like 80 engineers, very bright people at Q42, I was wondering, well, with this 80 bright minds, there has to be something that we can do, you know, to kickstart some of the global challenges that we see. So this is basically my question to Greenpeace. Is there anything that you see that we can do to help you with? So they were really enthusiastic about the idea. And so we organized a small hackathon together. And they came up with this challenge. And the challenge was the forest fires in Indonesia, basically. And this is where we worked on with them for a couple of days.
What kind of hackathon was it?
Yeah, so every year we organize a hackathon, basically. So it's about 2 days where all the engineers start working on a project that they are passionate about. So my idea was, okay, well, I'm going to collect some engineers. I'm going to form a group together with Greenpeace, and we start working on this global challenge. So instead of like working on some cool gadget or some cool game, we start to work on a global challenge. And this is pretty new because, you know, engineers like to work on new stuff, but many times it's just, you know, cool gadgets and cool games, which is, you know, fine. But I was, you know, really interested in the next thing, the real global challenge. So suddenly we were with a group of, I think, around 10 engineers or so working on this major issue about forest fires in Indonesia, which was like crazy big problem.
Okay, sounds impressive. And after the moment, after 2016, with the hackathon of Greenpeace, you decided to actually build this organization, the social enterprise, right? Hack the Planet, order to hack other global challenges other organizations are experiencing. Perhaps we can dive into some of these projects you have been working on in the past years with Hack the Planet. one of the projects I've personally experienced. It's called Meet the Soldier, if I'm correct, which is about two Ugandan fighters from rival tribes. Basically, you saw this situation, you saw a need in order to bring people together who were actually enemies of each other. So you thought, okay, let's use then virtual reality in order to bring these people together, right? So how did it go? Like, why did you decide to use virtual reality, and how did it grow from a concept to actually being this Meet the Soldier solution?
A lot of research is done and still is going on about the effects of virtual reality. Like, there are many effects, right? But there's this one particular effect that I'm interested in, and that is empathy. So basically meaning that if you would be in a virtual reality environment, there are things going on in your mind that could possibly trigger a form of empathy for a person or a situation. Exactly. So yeah, so we started to again started talking to many organizations, and one of them, Mensen and Missy, they called, they really really like this idea, because they are working in this field of bringing people together. So they immediately had an idea of a place where we could go to together with them in Uganda, where they knew that the tribe leaders for decades had all sorts of conflicts, and now they were also in the area there working on all sorts of reconciliation projects with local priests, etc. With all, so there are many efforts already going on. So the idea of bringing them very close together using virtual reality, that really resonated with them, because you know they really recognized that the value, like if they could bring these people together, these major figures, they're the leaders, if they could bring them together and they would, you know, be more friendly together, basically, that would even be a big win, let alone be that if they could be friends, that would be like a moonshot.
How did it go? So you went to these tribes who are coming from traditional communities, explaining them that you are building this kind of a virtual reality dream solution in order to bring them together? Or how did that go? I mean, how did they react to coming there with this fancy technology?
So, yeah, but they obviously didn't have any idea about the technology. They had never seen a virtual reality goggles. You know, I remember one of the times I was driving with one of these tribe leaders to their territory, and there was a movie in the bus, and it was Lord of the Rings, basically, and he was looking at it really really fascinated. Mm-hmm. And later I understand that he thought that what he was seeing on the television screen is where we came from. So the whole Lord of the Rings movie, he was like, wow, you guys are walking around with swords and your world is really cool. I was like, oh god. So it was really bizarre to see that they see these things in a very different way than we do. And even with the virtual reality goggles, even we explained, you know, about how the technology works, mm-hmm. we sometimes were surprised by how they would react to it. Mm-hmm. I can give you one example.
Please.
There was one situation where one of the tribe leaders was you know experiencing a scene, and he was thinking that this was unfolding exactly that moment. So what he was seeing was, you know, for his.
He thought it was real.
He thought it was real and it was happening at that same moment.
And how did they experience eventually being close to this rival tribe? Of course, through these goggles, through these virtual reality glasses, but still, they were very close. So that empathy aspect, what did it bring them? Was it positive?
Lomoromoy and Enrico both, you know, saw very private stuff from each other, from their families, from their friends, and they introduced so things that they would normally never ever show to anyone, especially not to their enemies. They suddenly were, you know, introduced to their villages, basically, which is a gigantic thing. You have to imagine if you are in a gigantic fight, for instance, and you suddenly see, for instance, you have a big clash with one of your neighbors, and then you see a virtual reality movie where your neighbor is, you know, introducing himself and, you know, all sorts of things that you didn't know about him, and you suddenly start, well, actually, it's kind of a nice guy, and I understand what he's going through, and, you know, you get really aboard the way he's living, and you know what made him the way he is. These two are now seeking out each other. So basically, they come over, and they are, you know, he described as a friendship.
Yeah. So it brought them together. These rival tribes. It brought them together through virtual reality by creating this empathy for each other. Right, that's very impressive.
Suddenly, when I realized this project had such an impact is when I started seeing people crying coming out of the virtual reality documentary. You know, just people like you and me, they were so caught up with the story, and they were, and this is when I realized, wow, this is not only having an impact on the tribe leaders, this is having an impact on the people that are seeing what is actually happening, because it's so recognizable.
I'm curious, this is a great example of how you have used virtual reality within peace building or peace reconciliation, one could say. Mm-hmm. Hopefully we can solve, we can create world peace through virtual reality. Another project I've been seeing coming by on the internet is called Hack the Poacher. So your organization is Hack the Planet, but then we have Hack the Poacher. You're using technology against poachers, right? Or exactly. How do I need to see this?
So again, from the perspective of Hack the Planet, I started thinking about, and I started talking to a lot of interesting people. And one of them is Laurens de Groot. He's running, he's running Smart Parks, which is an organization that is trying to help out national parks, securing them and managing them, and he's using smart technology, right? So I was talking to them, to Laurens, and I was like, okay, well, what are your challenges? And these areas are very, very big. So there can be rhinos, there can be elephants, and they can be all over the place. And you are basically looking for a needle in a haystack if you're trying to catch a poacher in that area. So but then suddenly I was thinking, well, what do these people carry around in these national parks? And is there any way we can start looking for that kind of stuff? And then Lauwen showed me all sorts of photos that they have about poachers that were arrested. And my eye fell on one of these photos that had, you know, all sorts of things, a gun, et cetera, but also there was a phone. I was asking, there's a phone. Can we start detecting those kinds of things? And then he said, well, if that's
tracing,
possible,
basically tracing the phones, what the FBI and the police and intelligence.
Exactly. This is where the idea of Hack the Poacher started. And then now we've been working on it for 2 years, and we've been to Zambia. We've been doing many, many things. We call it Hack the Poacher, but it consists of multiple things. And the first one is detecting poachers using GSM detection. So we basically are searching for phones in a large area, and we use special sensors for this. And the other thing is a smart camera trap that we are detecting that knows using machine learning what's on the photo. So it's analyzing the photo, and if there's a human on the photo, it says, hey, I've seen a human on the photo.
What will happen is every poacher, every individual who enters a park unregistered, then he or she will be become known within your system, basically, because then their phones are being traced, right?
Exactly. And next to that, often we got a question, well, what happens if poachers are turning their phones off? And that's a very good question, but the answer is pretty simple, right? So the answer is that if poachers would do that, there are a couple of things. First is that they use it for it's not a toy for them, right? So they use it to communicate and get out of the area. So if they have poached, for instance, an elephant, it's really tough job to get out of the area alone. It cannot be done basically. So they always call for their buddies to get into that area with a four-wheel drive, and they get their poached ivory and the parts of the animals. They get it into a four-wheel drive and they move out of the area. And sometimes they even have multiple animals in one run, they call it. So you have to imagine, like, you have like four or five elephants being shot that are in an area and they need to get out of the area, which is a gigantic task. So they cannot simply turn off their phones. Next to that, they use it for entertainment, navigation. There are multiple days in the field. So chances are pretty high that they're going to be using their phone at some point in time. The other thing is, but it's still a valid question, because if they would turn off their phones, we cannot detect them. But this is where the smart camera trap comes in. When it detects a human or anything of interest, an elephant or anything else, it can send a trigger. It can send that it's seen that. So rangers can be alerted, for instance, if the camera trap have seen a human in the field.
Sounds very impressive, but also very complicated, I can imagine. So, Tim, you're working on world peace. You're working on anti-poaching. What's next? Do you have any other ambitious projects in mind? Do you have like some kind of a dream project you would like to work on using technology to solve the global problems?
What my dream would be is not for myself to be working on these projects, but for many people to start thinking in the exact same way and see if they can help solving that issue. Even if you work in technology or not, it doesn't really matter. But I'm pretty sure that many people to start thinking about their own expertise. There's something that they can contribute to a given problem, and it really doesn't matter what the problem is. My message is always, you know, just select any given issue and make it your own. Make it your itch.
Yeah, the great words. I think we need to do it together, definitely. And it is a very good call to action. So if there are listeners, organizations who are trying to hack a specific challenge they're experiencing or their partners are experiencing, but are not able to hack it, you can always go to Tim or Google Hack the Planet, where together with a bunch of great developers, you might be able to hack your particular problem. Thank you very much, Tim, for this very inspiring podcast.
Thanks,
and all the best on your journey. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Alex. Thank you.